Now that some of the Bitcoin hysteria has subsided, I thought it would be a good time to take a fresh look at it. A fresh look at it and all the cryptocurrencies that have been created. And I've asked Christian Magoon, a veteran in the exchange-traded fund arena, to join me today to see if there are any new areas of focus in the digital marketplace. Hey, Christian, welcome to the show.
Hey, thanks, Steve. Great to be on and listen to you on iTunes quite often. So pleasure to be not only a listener, but a guest.
That's great. So remember, everybody, we're on iTunes and you can podcast us. So let's get from the very beginning. Let's say I've never heard of Bitcoin or blockchain. Let's start with blockchain, because that seems to be the area that people think really have amazing long-term potential. So what is blockchain?
Yeah, so blockchain is a foundational technology. And one way to think about it is to go back maybe 20 years when we learned about another foundational technology called the internet. And a lot of us learned about the internet for the first time by encountering a website or using email. That was an application built on internet technology. Okay. So Bitcoin is an application, as are other cryptocurrencies, that's built on blockchain technology. And what blockchain technology is a decentralized ledger, or another way of saying it is it's like a massive data spreadsheet that's not held on one computer, and instead it's held on many computers, and it's a network that really stores, verifies, and secures data. So some people have said the internet is like the information superhighway. Blockchain is like the data verification and transaction superhighway.
Okay.
It creates a trusted way to transact all around data.
So if you create a transaction, and what exactly happens that allows that transaction to be spread, I guess, to different computers around the world to be tracked back to its original source? How does that work?
So there's essentially a network of computers that form the blockchain. And there's public blockchains, something like Bitcoin or other cryptocurrencies where you or I could buy a Bitcoin. We suddenly become part of that network. Then there's private networks where maybe a group of companies or service providers would enter in that's just for them. But essentially, data is entered into the blockchain in the form of a block. And that block and that piece of data then needs to be verified by an algorithm that all the computers on the network share. And essentially, it involves cryptography and decoding whether or not that piece of data is valid. Once it's confirmed by one computer and they quote unquote solve it, by the way, that's called mining, then all the other computers take that answer and run it backwards to verify it. Once it's verified, that piece of information or that piece of data, the block, gets chained to all previous other blocks or pieces of data in this blockchain group. Hmm. That's really where it gets its name. And that's one of the unique parts about blockchain is that there's not one central party that decides if data is correct or not, that stores the data.
Right.
And that offers a lot of interesting implications when it comes to speed, trust, as well as cybersecurity.
Wow. Good answer. Actually, I understood it. So congratulations. So where does Bitcoin come in? I mean, you said it's an application based on this blockchain, but it's an application that does what? I mean, I know what email does. What does Bitcoin do?
Well, you know, Bitcoin really, I think, is designed as a store of value. Some people would say it's a commodity. Other people would say it's a currency. It's kind of up for debate. But essentially, it's a store of value. And with that Bitcoin, you can actually go out and hopefully transact, whether it's trading or buying different types of potential intellectual property, or maybe even a pizza in a famous case where someone paid, I think, 10,000 Bitcoin for a pizza when it was near worthless.
Mm-hmm.
But I think the important point to think about Bitcoin or Ethereum or any of these other cryptocurrencies is cryptocurrencies need blockchain, but blockchain doesn't need cryptocurrencies. It's just the first application that was built using blockchain. And this goes back to 2008. The creator of kind of blockchain and Bitcoin published a paper. We're not sure if it's an individual or it's a group of people that outlined blockchain technology in its first application called Bitcoin. So in one case, Bitcoin is a store of value. There's other types of cryptocurrencies that represent other stores of value. So some cryptocurrencies might represent the ability to use some computing power of the blockchain to essentially borrow some computing power to solve a problem. Others might be involved in the ability to transfer money. Ripple is one that's known there and is being embraced by many financial institutions to do money transfer, including cross-border. So all these different cryptocurrencies generally have a unique purpose. Although with that being said, there are scams out there, and one really has to understand the use of this cryptocurrency. Often it's theoretical. Not many of them are actually in use, but that's really kind of how you assess potentially the viability of a cryptocurrency.
All right. So let me ask you a question here. I understand as an investment person, I understand what a store of value is. I can see that gold would be considered a store of value because it has a certain finite amount, or it's a finite resource, number one. And number two, it's desirable to many for jewelry and just for its very nature. Actually, gold is fairly pretty much indestructible. So I understand that as a value because it's in demand and it's desirable. I can't understand where the value is in Bitcoin. It doesn't seem to give me anything back.
Yeah, and I think that's a great kind of approach looking at gold. So like gold, Bitcoin, there is a scarcity to it. Like gold, where it's probably the most widely accepted precious metal or store of value in the metals complex worldwide, Bitcoin is the most widely accepted type of cryptocurrency worldwide. Like gold, you could potentially take a gold coin to almost anywhere in the world and get some quote-unquote hard currency or fiat currency. Bitcoin has that fungibility as well to do cross-border transactions, to show up in another country and translate that Bitcoin into some type of hard monetary value. However, as you know, gold isn't as volatile, and that's one of the issues around Bitcoin right now. If it's a store of value, what is it really worth? We've seen it worth several thousand dollars in the last year and a half, and you know, $20,000 in the last year and a half. So it hasn't matured yet to really have kind of the stable form of value. And to me, that's one of the underlying issues that, in my opinion, makes it more of a speculative alternative investment than a true store of value like gold.
Oh, that's a great answer. Yeah, I would agree. I think I can't figure out how to value it. So I would not want to buy it except as a speculation. And as anyone knows, a speculation can return a wonderful rate of return, but you can also lose everything or most of everything with a speculation like that. Let's get back to blockchain for a moment. So it's this digital ledger. You know, a ledger, when I hear the word ledger, I think of kind of the old style. You open up this book and there's two columns there, you know, debits and credits. And you're keeping track of all the money that's coming in. You're keeping track of all the money that's going out. And, you know, that's your ledger. So a digital ledger sounds to me like kind of the same thing, only it's digital and it's spread and it's checked and rechecked and, you know, algorithmically proofed by all of these other computers. And I also got to understand a little bit about this when Kodak announced that they were going to be using blockchain for their photographers. And then I started to really understand that, first of all, I didn't even know Kodak was still in business, but that a photographer who has this intellectual property, maybe they sell their stuff to sites like Shutterstock and others, and people license their material. You know, I would think it would be hard for them to prove that they actually own something, or very cumbersome anyway, to prove, hey, this is my photo and then I've got, you know, here's my proof. But if you use blockchain and that digital information is now traceable back to its source, wow, I thought that's pretty powerful. Can you take it from there?
Yeah, I think that's a great example of a kind of an innovative use. And not only could that intellectual property be tracked, but then you could actually be paid through that blockchain. I think Kodak is, you know, talking about not only having the ability to track that intellectual property like photographs digitally, but then also for companies that use that intellectual property, be able to then repatriate some licensing fee or revenue through that blockchain back to the actual creator. But you're exactly right. You know, I think blockchain's big promise is that in a lot of ways, it eliminates kind of the middleman that, you know, typically was providing friction in any transaction. It takes them time to go in between the two parties. There's cost involved. In this case, you know, if Kodak is using this blockchain with photographers, it's really the block kind of a peer-to-peer commerce. Photographers use the blockchain and it goes right to the end user. The end user secures those rights and then sends payment back on the blockchain. There's not an accounting program or a payment verification.
Mm-hmm.
It's very efficient. It also creates, you know, trust. When you think about how do you trust that you can actually license this image, or how do you trust that someone's going to pay you for this image? The blockchain does that because it only releases the image if there's payment. There's also a lot of security around this. So because this is a blockchain and there's not one single ledger, the ledgers are on thousands of computers, all updated and verified in real time. There's not something called a single attack vector. And that simply means there's not one point that can be attacked that has all the information. Today, when we look at data, payments, transactions, and we see a lot of these cyber attacks, it's because there's essentially a centralized point of information that they're able to attack. And by that single attack, they're able to get the information. In a blockchain, you'd have to literally attack thousands of computers at once to bring the blockchain down, because taking one computer out doesn't affect the rest of the blockchain. So,
but hold on. Trying to understand this. But isn't all the information from that transaction or on that block contained on each computer? It's not as if these thousands of computers have little parts of the information. So you can steal one and get it all, can't you?
Well, if you did steal one computer, you have a cryptographic key that you'd actually have to go in and decrypt the actual access to the blockchain. And then, you know, you couldn't steal information from the blockchain because you could access it. And there's varying levels of types of blockchain in terms of what permissions and a user can get. But if you were on a public blockchain, you stole someone's computer, you decrypted yourself into the blockchain.
Mm-hmm.
There's no ability for you to change what's in the blockchain. It's immutable.
Yeah.
There's no pencil and eraser that you can go out and do it. What you could potentially do is try to add a false block, if you will, or set of information.
Yeah.
But ultimately, that wouldn't be proved out because all the other computers would have to verify it, and that there would be an error.
Good.
However, you could steal someone's key to their Bitcoin and actually be able to go in and essentially unlock their vault where their Bitcoin is,
and that's
is kept.
And that's definitely happened before. So.
Yes, with exchanges and in individuals who own cryptocurrencies.
I'm talking with Christian Magoon. He is really a veteran in the exchange-traded fund arena, and we're going to talk about a fund that he and his company has created to help you invest in blockchain. So we've got about 2 minutes left. So, you know, as investors who are not actually doing any transactions in blockchain or may not own Bitcoin, as we said, which is speculative, I think there are starting to be some ways to invest in this blockchain technology. And you're involved with a blockchain ETF that was created, the symbol BLOK. Tell us a little bit about that. We have about 2 minutes left.
Yeah, so we believe for longer-term investors, the approach to take to blockchain technology is really to invest in the underlying technology, not necessarily speculate on cryptocurrencies, but really invest in the pick in the axes, the infrastructure of blockchain, because of so many disruptions that it's likely to start to promote in various industries, whether that's banking and stock exchanges, logistics, record keeping, computing and media. So what we've done is we've put together a group of blockchain engaged companies.
Mm-hmm.
These are publicly traded companies that are the leaders in investing in private blockchain companies, research and development in their own companies. And also there's a variety of companies that already receive revenue from blockchain related activities. So we've bundled these group of companies together, about 50 of them around the world, that we think provide a great infrastructure play on blockchain. We think it's a little bit like investing in the internet 20 years ago. You don't really know who the winners are going to be, but you can kind of look at the groups that are most engaged now as being a healthy group to have one of the leaders or many of the leaders emerge from.
Very good. All right. Well, unfortunately, we are out of time. So to all my listeners, listen, we're just talking about the facts. We're not making any predictions. Please, please do your homework before making any investment decisions. You can definitely lose money in investments and investments like this that are especially new and in a sense, untested. Be very careful. Get yourself a prospectus and read it. Talk to your investment advisor and all of those other things that I always say all the time. Be careful out there. Hey, if you want to hear the interview again and want to get these and many more informative interviews straight to your inbox, subscribe to our weekly update at stevepomerantz.com. And if you have a question about what was just discussed, ask us. Go to stevepomerantz.com and ask us anything you'd like. That's stevepomerantz.com. Hey, Christian, thanks so much.
Thanks for having me, Steve.